Welcome to my new podcast, Tea with the Queen. Some of you might know me as the Legal Queen on social media. From what started as just passing the time has turned into a business in excess of 1 million every year. But actually, it's been a tough journey to get here. By about 2011, the Legal Services Commission decided that they would have a massive audit, if you will. We've done some checks and balances. You now owe us 250,000. I didn't know what to do. I don't have that kind of money. The firm doesn't have that money. My career would have been over. After many, many sleepless nights, I'd managed to repay the entire debt and all was well. Just as I was confident enough to take somebody else on, another solicitor to help me out, I got another bill through the door. Now the firm owed 480,000. It was the hardest time of my entire life. I just wasn't sure if I could keep going. I would go in at silly o'clock in the morning. Oh, I'm gonna get emotional. Oh my God. Because it actually gets so much worse. Okay, let's go. Hey guys, and welcome to my new podcast, Tea with the Queen. Some of you might know me as the Legal Queen on social media. I'm a practicing family law solicitor and have been now for over 20 years. And I have regularly, over the past 4 years, been putting out short form content on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and of course, YouTube Shorts, all things around family law. Whether it be helping you guys make an application to the court or perhaps giving you some guidance and suggestions as to where you go next and what you do next if you're representing yourself. But I thought it would be fun if I shared my story and my journey with you as to how I got here as a family lawyer on social media, with now close to 1.8 million followers. So I'll take you from when I started as a lawyer through my journey, which includes a failed law practice, right through to where we are today, where now I own my own law firm that generates over 1 million gross turnover each year. And that's after only 4 years of opening the doors. Ironically, law was never on my to-do list. I did an English degree initially, and in my third year, decided to get married at the tender age of 21. My husband was 22. Following that, I was really keen to begin a family. I thought that being a housewife was what I wanted to do. Never wanted to be part of the corporate world. My first degree, as I say, was in English. So I preferred storytelling, reading books, writing, that sort of thing. Fast forward a few years, and I've now got three little boys under five: Patrick, Ronan, and Connor. We then decided that actually we would leave the UK behind and we would go and explore Australia. So the five of us packed up. I think my youngest then was about two. We got on a plane, having no knowledge really of Australia, except that we had visas to stay there for 2 years. We didn't have a job to go to, but we kind of knew that we'd sort it out, that things were going to be okay. Get to Melbourne, where my husband's family were, and after 10 days of the rain, we just thought, absolutely not. That's not what we left the UK for. So we headed north to Brisbane, where we actually ended up staying for a further 5 years and had our fourth son, Declan. So it was during my time in Australia that I decided I probably needed to think about having a career and that I wanted to go back to work. Up until now, I'd only ever done admin jobs, secretarial mainly. Back in the day, one of the electives at school was typing. And there was a time, because I did English, that I thought I wanted to be a journalist. So I figured if I learned to type, it would be a handy skill to have. And it turned out it was a handy skill, but not for being a journalist, more that I could get jobs as a secretary, I could work part-time, I could fit in my schedule around the kids, and all seemed to work well. But now I was sat there thinking, I don't really want to leave the kids to go and be a secretary. Perhaps I need a career. So I thought to myself, it's between medicine and law, and decided actually to do medicine. Realised didn't have the right A-levels to go and do a medical degree. So I thought, right, I need to get chemistry and biology under my belt. Went to night school, did two classes of chemistry and thought, absolutely not, this is not for me. Let's go to plan B and I'll do law. Luckily enough, I got accepted into Queensland University, which is quite a prestigious university. God knows how I managed that, and ended up being accepted onto the Juris Doctorate for Law. I already had a degree, so it was a postgrad qualification. They also offered the classes in the evening, which was so handy because it meant that I could look after the boys during the day. And when Brendan came home, I would then shoot into Brisbane City and study from 6 till 9, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. And then the exams they would put on for you at the weekend. So the next 3 years saw me do a law degree, sit 36 exams, whilst looking after 4 boys. Patrick now was probably around the age of 8, so they're all fairly young. I was actually pregnant with Declan while I was in my first year of university. So, you know, just for something else to do, was having another baby as well, but got to the finish line. Managed to graduate, pass my law degree, and then had the option of, well, do I be a barrister or a solicitor? Because once you've finished your law degree, you can choose one of the two. So I decided to go to the bar. It just seemed a little bit more dynamic. I liked the idea of being in court, doing advocacy, and that's where my training then took me. I qualified as a barrister, and in Australia, as I'm sure is the same here in England and Wales, where I now practice, you are given work and you take it. You don't really have the luxury of choosing. There are so many baby barristers, as we were called, looking to get contracts, looking to get employment, looking to get into a set of chambers. I was very lucky to get offered a tiny, tiny room in a set of chambers that practiced crime. So for the first 6 months, I was dealing with all the petty criminals. So peeing in front of doorways, shoplifting, that sort of thing. But it got me into court, which was what I was so desperate to do. It got me in front of magistrates. It got me in front of district judges. And as time went on, my reputation began to grow. For whatever reason, and I always say this, I never chose family law, but I was starting to dislike crime. I didn't like the people that I was representing. It just seemed to be the same old, time after time. And it was turning into a bit of a thankless job. So I was looking for another area of law. And all of a sudden, a barrister who was in my chambers, a senior barrister who's actually now gone on to be a judge, came to me with a family court brief. She had been given the brief by her instructing solicitors and she didn't have the time to do it. She'd been booked to do a 5-day hearing and just gave me the brief and said, get yourself down to the court this morning and sort this one out for me, which I did. And that's where it all turned. So that's where family law began for me. I carried on practicing as a barrister for about 2 years until Brendan and I decided it was time to come home. The reason for that is that Paddy was starting, our eldest Patrick, was starting senior school. And we knew that once he started senior school, we probably wouldn't disrupt him. You know, it's big school, as we called it back then. And it was fairly important that he had the consistency. So what started as a 2-year, let's just go and enjoy it while the kids are young kind of thing, turned into 5 years. And now we were making a serious decision about do we stay or do we return back to the UK? My career as a barrister was really taking off. By now I was working full time. I had lots and lots of briefs. I was probably in court 3 out of 5 days of the week. I was always based in Brisbane City, which was really handy. My husband, who's a builder, had set up his own construction company and he had a big client base. So he was getting more and more contracts in to build houses and patios and porchways and everything else. He was in his element. So it was a really big decision, but we decided let's return to the UK. It's where all our family was or are. I'm 1 of 5. My husband's 1 of 4. So a fairly big family back here in the UK. So 2007, I think, we returned back home. And then the decision for me was, do I continue as a barrister or do I now cross-qualify and train as a solicitor? And I thought, no, I'll stick at the bar. So I went to make inquiries and unfortunately they wanted me to do the whole training course again, which was about 12 months. It's kind of an academic year, so 9 months. But at the time, I think it was costing about £12,000. And as a young couple with, you know, 4 children now under the age of 12, we just couldn't afford that. So I decided that I would get myself a full-time position in a family law firm and just train at being a solicitor. You didn't actually need to train they were quite happy to give you, or the SRA, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, were more than happy to give me a practicing certificate as long as I sat just a couple of exams, accounts rules, I think, ethics, professional conduct, that kind of thing. So took myself off, did three exams that were about 3 hours each, and now I had a practicing certificate for England and Wales to practice as a family law solicitor. Well, as a solicitor, you didn't have to do family law. But because that's where my experience lay, started to apply for jobs in family law. Anyway, got offered this job in a small boutique practice that did a little bit of everything. They did some family law, they did some wills, they did a little bit of probate, they were notaries, so a little bit of everything. But of course, I was an attractive candidate to them because of all my advocacy experience. So I was offered the role based on the fact that I would be in court 3 days a week, as it goes, in the local court, doing all the children's and the finance matters. About a year in, they then decided that they wished to go into semi-retirement. They wanted to get rid of their biggest department within the firm, which was, of course, the family department. And I had, they offered me the actual department. Would you like to take on the family law department? We'll keep all the other departments and we'll move to another premises. And I decided, yes. I was at the tender age of 38. And thought, absolutely, I'll take on a firm. They had a legal aid contract, which I was fully aware of. It meant that people that needed help back then with family law didn't have to pay for their pay privately for their advice, that they could get it on a legal aid certificate, which meant that I'd sent my bill to the Legal Services Commission, which is essentially the government, and the government pay me. So I thought, okay, next adventure, let's do it. So agreed contractually to take on the family law department from them, entered into a price for the department, and off we go. That all started in about 2008, 2009. And by about 2011, the Legal Services Commission decided that they would have a massive kind of audit, if you will. And they wanted to go back to all the contracts that they had with law firms and do some checks and balances. The contract that I had entered into included the legal aid contract. And as a result, the Legal Services Commission presented me with a bill of, at the time, £250,000. And they estimated that that's what the firm owed back, just from different errors, and I won't go into what happened, but all prior to me taking over or buying this family law firm, but they worked out that that's what they wanted back. I was absolutely floored. I didn't know what to do. By now, I'd employed a staff of six or seven. There was myself and two other solicitors. The firm was really well known in the town where we worked. All of our work was family law. That's all that we did. That's all that we specialised in. The firm got a really, really good reputation. Clients found the firm really attractive, not only because we had legal aid, but because I had practised in advocacy, so I could go with them to court and would advocate a good result for them. So we very quickly grew a solid reputation. We were probably one of about a dozen family law firms within the town, but we were always in court. So Tuesdays, Wednesdays and Thursdays, you would always get either me or one of my team in court. We had a big client base, all was going great. When the Legal Services then wrote to me to say, actually, we've done some checks and balances, we've done a thorough audit of the firm that I'd taken on over the last sort of 10 or 15 years, you now owe us £250,000. I didn't know what to do. I remember going home and saying to Brendan, I don't have that kind of money. The firm doesn't have that money. We as a couple certainly didn't have that money with four young boys to look after. My husband had come back to Australia and come back to England, and much like myself, building my career, he was still building his, doing the same thing, you know, in construction, winning contracts to build houses and build extensions. But we didn't have £250,000. But equally, I had all these clients to look after. And when you own a firm, you are responsible for these clients. You are responsible for the money that they give you. You are responsible for their cases that are running. And I had overheads, you know, I'd taken on office premises. I'd entered into contracts for all sorts of things. You know, we had a phone contract. We had a lease for the rent. We had all sorts of things. So it wasn't an option to just close the doors. You've also got to remember that if you have ever been made bankrupt or, you know, there's any kind of flaw on your financial record, the SRA, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, they won't give you another practicing certificate. So the pressure was on. I had to find a way out of this. Otherwise, I was potentially going to not only lose the firm, but lose my practicing certificate as well, which meant that my career would have been over. After many, many sleepless nights, I made the decision that the only way I was going to ever be able to repay the legal services back, a bill that wasn't mine, that I'd entered into contractually, was to literally do all the work myself. So I laid everybody off, which was the hardest thing to do, gave my entire team, bar one lady, their notice, which was really sad. That was a difficult day to do all that. And then began what was the hardest task, journey, objective, obstacle, put whatever label you want on it, but it was the hardest time of my entire life. I would work 7 days a week. I would go in at silly o'clock in the morning. Oh, I'm going to get emotional. This is horrible. Oh my God. Oh my God. Because it actually gets so much worse. Okay, pull it back. Okay, let's go. So then began what was definitely the hardest journey of my life. I had to work 7 days a week looking after all of these clients. I was absolutely determined that this would not defeat me, that I was hanging on to my practicing certificate for dear life. And that I would get this money. I didn't know how. I really didn't know how I was going to do this, but I was going to get this money back to the Legal Services Commission. What was equally hard is that this wasn't my debt. It was a debt that I had inherited. Obviously, I tried to negotiate with the people that I'd bought the practice from, but contractually, I'd signed it. I'd taken over the business, warts and all. It was my debt. So started to work 7 days a week. The one lady that I kept, bless her, she would do all of my typing for me. She would answer all of the phone calls that came in the door. I couldn't keep taking on clients anymore because it was just me. Had to look after an existing client base, which I don't mind telling you was probably near on 300 clients. Gradually got every single one of them looked after. And, you know, managed to get on top of the other two solicitors that I had to let go, got on top of their caseload. So I felt more comfortable that I was running all of these clients on my own, and rang up the Legal Services Commission and said, look, they back then, I don't know how it works now because I don't do legal aid anymore, but back then they would pay you, I think it was weekly, or maybe it was monthly. So you would send in your bill, and it was probably monthly actually when I look back. And I said to them, look, keep it. Just keep all the bills that I send in to you until this debt is paid. The firm was probably generating about £70,000 to £80,000 a month. So it would have taken about 4 months to pay off the debt. And they were happy with that. You know, remember, they had the power to come in and close us down if they wanted to. So it was almost like entering into a payment plan. But it was the only way that I could do it to kind of save the firm. So they were happy with that and off I went. And you're probably asking, well, how did you survive in terms of I had my own mortgage to pay and bills to pay? Well, obviously, Brendan stepped up, not that he never would anyway, and he took on responsibility for everything. And we really just tightened our belts. You know, it was very lean in the Maloney household for a good few months, but we got to the finish line. I was exhausted. Brendan was exhausted, but actually we'd managed to repay, or I'd managed to repay, the entire debt, which I think at the time was about 260,000, and all was well. So you take a breath and you think, great, that done. Maybe we can start to employ some more people, because by now we'd opened up the books again. We'd opened up the phone lines. We'd opened up the doors. Remember, we still had a great, or I still had a great reputation in the town. And people wanted the firm to represent them. Just as I was confident enough to take somebody else on, another solicitor to help me out so that I could go back to just working Monday to Friday again, I got another bill through the door. This time, the Legal Services Commission, having done another checks and balances and audit, decided that now the firm owed £480,000. It was such a massive blow. I can honestly say that it tested me like nothing else. I mean, everyone likes to think that they have kind of a strong mental ability, that they have resilience, but this tested me like nothing else. And I just wasn't sure if I could keep going. You know, working 7 days late into the night, missing out on the boys as well for the best part of 4 months. What I mean by that is, you know, they were all playing football and Brendan was just doing everything at the weekend, even down to the shopping and the washing. And I was just constantly at work. It was exhausting. It was exhausting for both of us. And to now be given another huge bill, it was a case of, I just don't know if I can do this. But again, I just thought, I can't be defeated and I need my practicing certificate because I love being a family law solicitor. So we just have to keep going. And what I decided to do was to venture out into private practice. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the terms, law back in the day, and still is to a small degree, is funded in two ways. You either have clients who qualify for legal aid, in which case the government pays you, or you have normal private paying clients. And that's what I decided to do. I decided to venture out and try to attract more private paying clients. The difficulty I faced was that my firm was really well known for family law, but more importantly, was really well known for offering legal aid. So local organisations, charitable organisations, citizens' advice, they would all, people that phoned in, they would all point them to my firm because we had legal aid. And what can then happen is, if you are a private paying client, you can sometimes get the view, or have the view, that if it's a legal aid solicitor, they won't be as good as a solicitor that only deals with private clients. So I had a double-edged sword. A, I didn't need to advertise for my legal aid clients, but actually I couldn't take on enough to pay back this bill with just me working on my own. And I had to then start marketing. I didn't have the time to do that, to get in private clients who, and market maybe twice as hard, because the private paying clients thought, well, she's a legal aid solicitor. Anyway, I phoned up the Legal Services Commission again and managed to get a repayment plan of 6 months this time, and went back to just working and working and working and bringing it down and bringing it down. Eventually, throughout that journey, I had one of my opponents come to me, and she was being made redundant from her firm. And we had been against each other in court a lot. And she had said to me, you know what, I just think what you do is great work here. You're always so busy. I could learn a lot from you. She was a fair bit younger than me. I'm being made redundant and I'd really like the opportunity to come into your firm and be your partner, essentially, which was actually music to my ears, because I thought that, you know, having somebody at the helm to help me, to support me, I'd known her for quite some time. And I thought, you know what? Okay, let's do it. I remember having a conversation with my mom and she was like, no, don't take a partner. Remain, you know, keep your 100% of the business. by now I was on my knees. I was like, you know, it would be so nice to share that with somebody. Anyway, fast forward another year, maybe 18 months, partners on board. It was unequal shares. It wasn't 50-50, but it was great. She had done legal aid as well, but she'd done a lot more private practice than I had with the firm that she'd come from. She was able to take some of the private clients with her that wanted to follow her to my practice or to our practice. And things looked, they were looking up. They were really looking up. Unbeknownst to me, my partner was actually taking contracts behind my back and wasn't telling me about that. And I was in London one day. I can't remember what I was there for, but I remember arriving back home, getting off the train and noticing that there was a voicemail message on my phone. And it was from my partner saying that she had taken the clients, the private paying ones that was, that we'd spent the last sort of year and a half building up, that she had also got into other contracts that she didn't want to bring into our business, but that she was setting up practice on her own. And that was it. She was gone in the blink of an eye. And I just felt, oh my God, why does this keep happening to me? Like, why do I keep getting landed with all this work and all this, you know, clients to look after? I just felt that this has to be the last time that I can do this. And, you know, was convinced that if I can just get through this one last time, I'm leaving family law. It's clearly not for me. I'm clearly not a great businesswoman. I keep entering into these contracts and people keep dumping all over me. It's not right. You know, I'm just not cut out for this life. I spent the weekend after receiving that voicemail going through the clients that were left. And we used to offer fixed fees. And what that means is you'd say to somebody, we'll do your divorce for a fixed fee of £500. And the £500 would come into the firm and it would be billed, which means that the office would receive the money. And then we would do the divorce. And what had happened was she had taken all the other clients except those that were fixed fee, which meant that we'd already received the money. But of course, their files hadn't been completed. So now I had a client base of probably 80 to 100 where the firm was obligated to do the work, but there was no more money coming into the firm. So what do? I was tired. I was really tired. And I thought, I just don't want to do this anymore. So I decided to close down the firm. Obviously, I had to look after the clients. That you know, that was always going to be my main concern. And I went out and I got myself a full-time job. And to be an employee where I didn't have to be HR, where I didn't have to hire or fire, where I didn't have to worry about finding a wage bill, where I didn't have to worry about anything else, I could just go in and do my job, seemed like absolute bliss. And for the first year, what I used to do was finish my 9-to-5 job and then go back to my firm where nobody worked and it was in complete darkness and go in and work till about 11 o'clock, finishing off these fixed fee clients, which took me probably the next 6 to 7 months. The sad thing was that whilst I honoured every single contract with the client, the firm had no money coming in. So I not only had to close the firm down. And remember, we were a small firm. I was the biggest shareholder in the firm. So I had taken on some personal guarantees, thinking that the firm was always going to be great. The firm was a great firm. Like, it generated an awful lot of money. I just had too many people coming after me for debts that just weren't my debts. But because of that, I was now personally responsible for things like the rent and for the outstanding phone lease and all the other things that we had. And I can't remember it all. Anyway, it came to, I think, about 50 grand, something like that. There was an awful lot that was owed. So I then had to enter into an IVA, which was fine because the SRA will not take your practicing certificate off you. But of course, what it did do, it gave me an absolute shocking credit rating. And for those of you out there that have an IVA, you'll know that. For a good few years. Look, I'd managed to get through the storm, as I saw it, and as long as the clients were looked after and there was no clients' complaints, and as long as the SRA were happy to keep giving me a practicing certificate. Because remember, I was still working for a law firm as a family solicitor. I was just an employee. So managed to sort the firm out, finished looking after all the clients, closed the doors once and for all, entered into the IVA, slowly, bit by bit, managed to get everybody paid off over sort of the next 3 to 4 years, wipe the slate clean, and off you go again. By now, I'm probably 3 years in to this new firm that I was working for, and my boss, who was the head of the family law department, decided that she wanted to go elsewhere. So I applied for her role and I got it. So here I am looking after, it was a national law firm. We had offices in Bristol, Manchester, Stratford-upon-Avon and London. So here I am heading up the family department and looking after four offices. On the road, travelling, I used to spend sort of Mondays in the Bristol office and Tuesday and Wednesday in the Manchester office, Thursday in the London office, and then back to Bristol for the Friday again. And on this went. And it was great. Bit by bit, I was learning so much. I was on the board of execs. I was being invited to the meetings every week and every month. And I was being exposed to all sorts of information that was, I remember being in the meetings thinking, God, I wish I knew this stuff when I had my own firm. This would have been so handy to know. I was learning about contracts. I was learning about negotiations. I was privileged enough to sit at the table with some people that really knew their stuff. And I would literally just absorb everything that they were telling me. I was looking at their style, trying to replicate how they did things, how they did business. Our head of, if you like, was a female. And she was excellent, the way she negotiated, the way she handled herself. And over the 7 years that I was there, I would have many a chat with her, and she taught me so much about management, about leadership. She might not know this actually, but I really would hang off her every word. And so much of what she said, and just by watching her, just made complete and utter sense. Then we went into lockdown and we were all sent home, as the whole world was. And it was when we got into lockdown that I realised just how burnt out I was. You know, remember, I'd been doing 7 days a week for a long time. And then I'd gone into a very corporate role after a couple of years, was head of department. I mean, when I left, I think there was 28 or 29 solicitors back then in the family department. So it was a big old department to be running and being responsible for. And I realised I was completely and utterly burnt out. So I decided I would hand my notice in. And by now I am, what am I now, 49? And I just thought, you know what? It's been a great ride. It's been a roller coaster of a ride. But I think I'm just happy to do some consultancy work. Maybe I'll just work part-time. And that was genuinely my plan. Because I'd been on the board of execs and I'd headed up the department, my contract prevented me from, when my notice period finished, from actually getting another job for 3 months. Just contractually, I couldn't do it. So I had 3 months where I couldn't work, which was brilliant, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to take some time off and I'm just going to spend some time with the family. We're all in lockdown anyway. Happy days. I remember handing my, I had to give a 6 month notice period, and I remember handing my notice in and it was due to finish on the 31st of December. So I really enjoyed New Year's Eve, because as of the 1st of Jan, I was looking into 3 months of doing absolutely nothing. Anyway, it was during those 3 months that my kids decided that to pass the time, they would get into TikTok and start doing some dance videos like the whole nation was doing. They then decided they would do some comedy skits, and it really took off for them out of nowhere. Like lots of TikTokers, it really took off for them. And my third son, Connor, said to me, "You should do this, Mum. You're sat around, you're clearly bored, we're all in lockdown, why don't you do it?" And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm not doing that. What can I going to talk about? Talk about divorce to people. Tell people how to do it themselves. Because of course, what was happening, we were hearing on the news, there was lots of domestic violence because people were locked up together. And there was lots of people that were maybe trying to get non-molestation orders and they couldn't. This was still coming through the grapevine from colleagues of mine that were still emailing me, even though I wasn't in practice right now. So there was lots of things going on that I thought, actually, you know what, maybe it would help people. Maybe I could tell people what application to download, you know, how they started the divorce themselves. Family lawyers, as most lawyers, have a stigma of being a little bit expensive, shall we say, a little bit hoity-toity. We can be a bit intimidating, or that's the general opinion that people have of us. And for those people that couldn't afford it, legal aid by now had gone. I forgot to say that. The legal aid, the Legal Services Commission, they're not doing legal aid anymore after 2013, hence the reason for their checks and balances in the previous years. But they weren't doing legal aid anymore, only if you're in a domestic violence relationship. So if you wanted to get a divorce or sort out the finances, or you weren't having contact with your children, you had to do it yourself if you couldn't afford to get a solicitor. So I just thought, you know what? Okay, let's do a few TikToks. And that's where Legal Queen was born. So before I know it, now remember, I can't work for 3 months. So people are DMing me literally after the first week. Oh my God, thanks for your video. That's so helpful. I'm actually looking to do a divorce. Would you just do it for me? And I'm having to say, no, I can't do it because I can't work. I can't practice. I can't work. I don't have the authority to work. I have my practicing certificate, but you can't take money off people as a solicitor without having a firm, without having all your checks and balances, your professional indemnity insurance all in place. So I'm going, absolutely not. No. Month one goes by, and again, it was the kid saying to me, you're doing phenomenally well. By now, we've probably got 10,000 followers after the first month. It's like, wow, this is really taking off. And the kid said, maybe you should think about setting up your own firm. Really? After all that I've just been through? Are we really going to go back there again? No. Absolutely not. Not doing that. Do not want that responsibility. I'm happy just pottering. Just want to be a consultant. I don't want all that responsibility again. By the end of my second month, I had over 100,000 followers on TikTok. And more people were asking me to represent them, to help them with their divorce. Not even represent them, help them fill out the forms. What forms do I need? Please, would you help me? And I was still saying no. And then I think the family were really sort of, look, Mom, you're onto something here. You know, what are you going to do when your 3 months are up? Are you really going to apply and go back to working for somebody else? Do you really want to be a consultant? Would you not get bored after a little while? And I started to listen and I thought, okay, I think because maybe I'd had 2 months off now, I was starting to get a little bit stronger. Mentally, I was starting to feel that I'd got it back again. Okay, well, we'll see. I'll make a decision at the end of the third month. By the end of the third month, I think I've now up to 120,000 followers on TikTok. Facebook has gone insane. Facebook, I think we're up to like 50,000 followers on Facebook. And there are so many people just DMing, emailing me. I had put together a little website, I think, or one of the boys had put together a website, and I'm getting so many emails through that I thought, okay, I'll do it, but here's what I do. I'm going to work from home. I'm not going to enter into a lease. I'm not going to start because I've had my fingers burnt before. I'm not going to enter into any big fancy phone contracts. I'm just going to have a mobile, a works mobile, and I'll do it from home. So I got myself sorted out as a sole trader, got my professional indemnity insurance sorted, set up an office account and a client account, got approval from the SRA, which was fine, and just thought, I'll just start with a couple of clients. We'll just do 10, which turned to 15, which turned to 20, which then turned to me thinking, I actually need someone in to help me do all the typing because I was uploading the divorce petitions to the court and I had people that wanted appointments with me, but I couldn't speak to them because I needed some admin support because I was doing all that myself. So I decided to take on a friend of the family, really. She had just given up a job. She was in between jobs. She was happy to come in and help me out. And therein started the growth of what is now Tracy Maloney Family Law. So 4 years in, a team of 12 two departments, not only a family law department, but a social media department, because this in itself has turned into a business where I'm going to start this fantastic new podcast. But I'm also going to be doing, continuing with the short form. And I really love the social media side of the business. It's almost given me a second career, if you will. But the more I do, the better I want to get at that, the more that I want to invest in different cameras and lenses and different lights and studios and equipment. And I really, really enjoy that. So from what started as just passing the time has now turned into a fully operational law firm, still just doing family law, with a turnover, gross turnover of in excess of 1 million every year, which I'm really proud of. And that's after only 4 years of practice. Each month is seeing more growth on growth on growth, which is super exciting. Constantly on a recruitment drive. I've been on a recruitment drive, I think, permanently for about 18 months. We are looking for solicitors, trainee solicitors, paralegals, and that's just to deal with the volume of work that keeps coming in, which is absolutely brilliant. But also given me an opportunity to dip my toe into something that I never thought I would do, which is social media. So what are the lessons that I've learned from that? Well, I've certainly learned that I'm resilient. Over the years, I've learned that you can trust people. I have certainly learned to trust people again. That said, when I get a contract to sign now, I'm super vigilant about signing that. And I will actually make sure that I've got some independent third specialist support to help me with that. I don't do a lot of contracts because in family law, we don't see a lot of contracts. So it's not my area of expertise. I've also learned to be patient. I think that if somebody had said to me when I was in my 30s that you are about to enter into a roller coaster of troubles, highs and lows in your legal career, but you will be starting all over again at the age of 50, I'd be like, absolutely no way. There is no way I want to be doing that. At 50, I would have thought I'd want to be slowing down, not starting again, and not starting two businesses, a law firm and a social media company. There was no way I thought I'd be doing that at 50. Also to know that in the grand scheme of things, stuff always works itself out. If I go back to when my first law firm was collapsing, when I was getting these huge bills in from the Legal Services Commission that wasn't my debt that I had to pay back, thinking I'm never going to get out of this. And looking back, thinking, you know what, everything kind of sorts itself out. As I've got older, I've always remembered that lesson. So I worry less. I still obviously worry and I still stress about things, but not as much as I did. And it's also helped me teach my children that, who have themselves gone on to own their own business. They all work together as brothers, which is great. But I'm able to share the highs and lows of what I've been through with them. So as a lawyer and particularly a mother, when you have children that are looking up to you, when I closed my first law firm, it felt very much like a failure. For a long time, I would beat myself up. As I'm sure, you know, those of you that are listening that have also had a business that's failed, you do blame yourself. You know, if you are conscientious, which, you know, I was and I still am, I'm very passionate about looking after my clients. You think that you've let everybody down, you've let yourself down, you've let your family down, that actually you're no good at business, that you couldn't, you know, make it work. As I've got older and I look back, I'm actually glad that those failures happened because it taught me to be so resilient. It's actually given me so much confidence in my ability now. Running the law firm now, and challenges happen every single day, and I take them in my stride because I've been there. You know, I've done that. I have managed to pay huge bills back and claw and look after the clients, which is the most important thing when you're a solicitor. but claw my way back up. And then, because all that happened, I then got to, for 7 years, work in a great job with exposure to some great people who were brilliant lawyers and still are, and really got exposure to, you know, what it's like to be a boss and to be a really good leader. So when I look back now, it was all meant to be. It was completely meant to be. And for those of you that may be out there, and you might be where I was when I was 38, almost 20 years ago now, know that. Know that things will work themselves out. They always do. They always do. So a lot of the rationale behind doing the podcast was, A, I just want to do more social media because I really enjoy it. But I want to now interview people that have a really interesting story to tell. And I hope that you think my story was interesting. Apologies if you didn't. But I really want to interview people that have a story to tell, that have maybe clawed their way back, that, you know, what are the lessons that they've learned along the way? What has it taught them about life in general, not just necessarily about business, but just about life in general? Have they grown? Were they defeated for a little while? Were they able to pull themselves back? Because I really think that there's a lot to be learned, not only just from going through it yourself, but listening to other people's stories. It not only helps and signposts and give guidance, but more importantly, I think it gives encouragement to people who are maybe lost or maybe in that dark place, whatever it might be. You know, they might be in a domestic violence relationship, they might be have addiction issues, they might be in the middle of a failing business. But I think that when you hear other people's journeys, because a lot of times what you see isn't actually what's going on. You know, people might look at the legal queen and think, oh, she's got it all going on. You know, family law solicitor, loads of views on social media. And all of that is true. But actually, it's been a tough journey to get here. And more importantly for me, it's about showing my children that no matter what happens, no matter how hard life gets, if you have grit and determination, you can push through anything. You can achieve anything. You know, as I said before, starting two new careers, family law career with my own firm and doing social media at the age of 50, I never thought would happen. And it has happened and it's going great. And it's a great career, which I really enjoy. And I'm thankful every day that I've been given another opportunity. As I sit here today across all of my four platforms, so TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, I have almost 1.8 million followers, which blows my mind when I say that out loud. There has been regular appearances on This Morning where they've invited me in to do live phone-ins for people that have family law questions. And I'm also a regular presenter with the BBC on a Radio 4 show called The Law Show. So if you want to hear some really interesting stories from some fascinating people that I've already started to interview, then subscribe to Follow the Journey. I have great plans for this podcast channel. I'm going to invest so much back into it for a bigger studio, better lighting, better equipment. I'm really passionate about making this an informative and interesting podcast.